let's go on an adventure. Bop, bop, a shoo, bop, 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 yeah. Let's go on it together. I did it, did it, did it, let's go on an adventure. Bop, bop, shoo, bop, 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 yeah. Let's go on it forever.
And a freaking AC. Yeah, we gotta turn off the
AC. 1, 2, 3, not it!
Son of a bitch.
Why is it me?
Because you gotta be quicker than that, Christopher.
You know, if we had longer headphone.
Or if somebody just took the damn remote out of his car.
No, we can't be that logical. If I had long enough, headphone cords, I could just take these rollerblade.
Why couldn't you just use your selfie stick that telescopes like 30 feet out and?
Because I am busy. I am busy using it.
For what? Back scratcher.
You would think it's a back scratcher.
Back scratcher.
It's actually a crack back scratcher.
Oh,
it's not white anymore. We're just gonna leave that over there.
And I'm a head out.
Now we go.
As I fall.
Now we got a bloopers reel. Yeah. Okay.
What the hell? Hey, I got a question for you here, Christopher.
Yes.
Do you know that Rob Zombie was on Pee-wee's Playhouse?
What? What?
Rob Zombie,
yeah,
was 19 years old and living in New York City.
Okay.
And he worked on Pee-wee's Playhouse for $5 an hour. And it gets so much better.
Okay.
So back in 1992,
yeah,
Rob Zombie, it was White Zombie. They were signed with Geffen Records. We're going to go behind the music here now, folks.
Oh, I like this.
Okay, they had a single. They were trying really hard to promote it. It was hard at the time because it was a little too weird for MTV and, back when they actually played music.
Yeah.
So your old pals Beavis and Butthead came along and they featured a song that literally boosted their records from about 500 records a week to about 50K. Oh. And within 6 months, they went from playing small clubs and arenas. So the moral of the story is here, your idols there, Beavis and Butt, helped shape the music industry.
Beavis and Butthead?
Yeah. I thought you'd like that.
Oh my god, I do. Yeah, that was awesome.
And I just thought it was fitting given, artists today that is also different from the norm.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Stuff, different from the normal genre and that comes along and he's kind of his own lone wolf, wild card, if you will.
Yeah, you know what? We are usually a very colorful show. We like to have a lot of lights, pretty lights, and lots of colors. But
a little razzle-dazzle.
A little razzle-dazzle. But I think it's kind of like today's kind of like that episode, that movie there, Plainville, where we just go black and white.
Yeah.
You won't know when it happens, but when you'll know when it happens. Okay, let me backtrack. You won't know when it happens, but you'll be able to tell when it happens, if that makes sense.
You'll know.
You'll know.
Yeah. You'll know.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's crazy. Guys, thank you for tuning in. This is going to be another episode of the Musical Chairs of Massachusetts, where we take musicians, shake them violently.
No, we do not give them shaken musician syndrome.
Oh, sorry. I mean,
come on now.
I mean, we hug them.
Yeah, we have some insurance, but come on, we're not violent creatures.
No, we hug our musicians violently. But no, we bring musicians in. We introduce them to the show, which is a hostage situation, and we're
gonna get us canceled. Stop it.
Sorry.
On a positive note, our artist on today's episode marks the 50th musician we have had pass through our doors in our studio.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that and reminded me because
things were getting real dark real quick.
Yeah, we're back on track. No, you're absolutely right. Our guest today is our 50th musician. And you're probably wondering, well, how's that work out, Chris? You guys are only on episode 26, I think it is. Well,
we've had multiple musicians. We've had bands come through, so we're... Yeah.
The math.
That's our body count right now, 50.
50, yeah.
That's our body count. Giggity.
Giggity. Yeah, it's been amazing. Like, we're in October. We're just a few days away from...
But actually, no. We got to back this up. Technically, right now, we are recording in the tail end of August. So we've had 50 musicians pass through these doors between February and August at this point.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm also glad you mentioned that, because the time-space continuum would have got confusing.
I'm glad I updated the flux capacitor.
Right. Oh, look at you.
Hey.
Yeah. So far we've had 50. I'm sure by the month of October we'll have 1 million. Sorry, I gotta do the pinky thing. 1 million.
It's blocked by the microphone. Use fail.
1 million.
There you go. I'm proud of you.
I've done good.
You've done good, kid. You've done good.
I learned things. So how crazy is that? And it's all thanks to our musical community, and it's all thanks to you guys, you, the viewer or listener, depending on how you're digesting this. So we thank you. We thank you for all of it.
Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias, señor and señoritas. Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup. Oui, oui. I don't know where I was going with that. But thank you. Thank you, guys. And Nikki, why don't you say, how about we just get into it, huh? You want to introduce?
Let's just do the damn thing.
Let's do it. All right.
Today we are joined by George Ramirez, a.k.a. Tasteless Jack, hailing from the rugged yet lovable city of Worcester, Mass. Tasteless Jack is an acoustic performer with a universal passion for music. His songs range in a variety of styles, from soft finger-picking in the vein of Iron and Wine and the strong, passionate wails of Pearl Jam, to the intricate strumming patterns of Dave Matthews. His music composition isn't beholden to any specific genre, hence the name Tasteless Jack. Welcome to the studio!
All right, great to be here. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is awesome, man. I was really impressed when I saw you perform out there at the Hardwick Rocks Festival. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was a hell of an experience. I mean, for music festivals, it's one of those goals that like every musician wants to go out and play a festival one day. But the reality is that when you do go play a festival the first time, more than likely you start at a small stage, mm-hmm. you know, it tucked away in the middle of nowhere from the festival fields, like 11 o'clock performance, you know, with barely anyone there because most of them are like go out, but most people are still just arriving to the fest and stuff like that. And that was just not the experience I had. You know, it was the complete opposite. I've seen those experiences for other performers. You know, I've seen them. Right. Like, I've worked security at music festivals and stuff. So I've had to work security at places. People who had like four or five people show up to their tent. You know, to watch them perform. But I had the complete opposite. You know, that way that festival was set up was ingenious.
It was
the fact that they had like the small solo performer stage right next to the beer and wine.
Yep.
So people wanted to be next to you to get their drinks and stuff to listen, and they wanted to stick around afterwards. And on top of that, having the main stage be right next to it and like literally like a hop and a skip away, like you could literally enjoy them either music from one position. And I think that was just really well done. I was blessed to one get booked on there by Amanda Melly. I met her through open mics as well. She's another amazing friend who does so much for the music community through open mics as well.
We have her coming on in December.
Oh, I can't wait to see that too. She is a godsend, an amazing friend, and provided the amazing opportunity along with her friend Tony to put a stage on for a bunch of us, and I performed that day alongside the Frederick Chamberlain, Jukebox Jake, Samantha Herman. So getting to share the bill of that day with like alongside other friends was also very special too, because again, when you go and perform these festivals for your first time, that's not the usual experience that you have. You know what I mean? I can't take that for granted. You know, that's definitely like something that was special and unique in that moment. It's my first like ticketed show, the first time people legit like paid money to come see me. You know what I mean? Like little things like that. Like people were trying to earn to make sure like they could afford to see me and stuff like that was a beautiful thing. Families out there enjoying themselves, clowns out there putting smiles on kids' faces, you know, amazing food out there, great artisans, you know. I ended up buying a little Jack Skellington.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
As you can see, Tasteless
Jack. There you go.
Jack Skellington is definitely part of my aesthetic. That's why I use the Tasteless Jack for Jack Skellington, vice versa.
So,
it was like a lot of stuff to do out there. A beautiful day, all in all, in the view of the mountains in the back. I don't know if you remember that day.
It was beautiful weather for that.
I can't forget like how beautiful it was. And the location, just like, wow, incredible. Hardwick Winery, was my first time there, actually. So it was like lucky.
Oh, yeah.
That was my first time experience.
Yep. No, it was great. You know, and I was just really impressed how you performed. You can definitely notice how everybody just attention just instantly switch over. And it was great. It was great. Those festivals are awesome. You know, that was my first time, at least on job, at a festival.
Nice.
And so I was tasked at taking everyone's photos. But what a privilege for that, you know, it was a little surreal because at one point, we were all in the corner there as other people were performing and I'm looking around and I'm like, I'm surrounded by musicians. And I know most of these musicians, you know, so, it was just cool. Cause I mean, you kind of take it when you're in that, you know, part of the musical world, you kind of take it for granted and you're like, these are just people, which they are, they're just people. But it's a little surreal also because
you're in the presence of just such amazing talent.
Exactly.
It's like awestruck almost.
Right.
And like, it was also the opportunity for me that day to meet you, you know, for the first time where I was like, immediately I saw you from a distance. I was like, oh, I gotta go say hi. I was literally recording a video of showing people who was around. And then when I saw you, I stopped it because I was like, wait, I gotta go shake your hand right over there. So I got to meet you like right after I had met Andy Kucha. So that was like my first time meeting him that day too. He was another amazing fella.
Oh, he is.
And those opportunities to meet people, you don't take them for granted.
The networking's incredible.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Little things like that. Like, I feel like what my philosophy is, rising tides raise all ships. So we try to raise the tides around people around us and that we're all floating together, you know, we're all kind of staying afloat.
I love that.
It's a lot more we in this than me. The reason I do the hashtag artist supporting artist thing on my Instagram and constantly repost other artists is kind of like to keep my own ego in check. You know, there's a lot of ego, a lot of narcissism, and that's really easy to fall into. And it's like, hey, look at my picture. Hey, look at me on stage. Hey, look at me. I'm going to be performing here. Check out my new song. Check out my new video. Check out my, I just wrote this today. You know, so it's
me.
It becomes very like nauseating. So I like to show what other people are working on, repost other people's things and stuff to kind of, you know, keep myself humble. And also, like, I'm inspired by them. You know, at the end of the day, like, if I see someone put out something that's really, really good, sometimes it makes me want to write something really, really good, too.
You know?
I just put in that effort.
I have a feather flock together.
Yeah. And it doesn't always have to be a full song. You know what I mean? If you can get down a verse and a chorus, come back to it later. Like, you know what I mean? It can be finished weeks or months later, even if, like, you like it enough and stuff. Like,
well, I mean, at the end of the day, this is your music. This is your art. You're on your own timeline.
Yeah. And there's also like important to pace yourself creatively and not burn yourself out. I did a month at the beginning of this year in January. I did a month with Morgan Elise, where we wrote a song every single day.
Oh, wow.
And that
was freaking tough. But that was insane.
Wow.
And that was a task. And there's a playlist on my YouTube page at Tasteless Jack, youtube.com/TastelessJack. Where you can see all 30 of them up there.
And
that was insane. Because it was like a matter of like keeping ourselves like thirsty, you know, keeping ourselves hungry, keeping our, you know, chomping at the bit. And now it's like, you can go back to those, you know what I mean? They're still there. Yeah, like, right. I don't need to like, there were some of those that I did enjoy and I kept singing and I actually ended up putting on an album and stuff like that. Or like the EP that's coming out or, most of them that I haven't. So it's like, I can always go back to those. And I do remember a couple of those that I was like, ooh, this would be a radio hit. Like, this would be really good.
You know,
this sounds really radio savvy. So it's good to know like yourself, like, pace yourself that way and know that your creativity doesn't have to come in that moment right there. Like, I need to get this done right now. Like,
right.
It can come in spurts. You
know? Yeah, definitely.
Do you happen to have one of those songs that you could share with us?
Oh, before we do that, though, I'm just going to I'm going to escape from my pod, and I'm just going to, I feel like he's a little bit off kilter, which is fine. We'll keep this recording because I'm going to make this fun. Oh, wait, relax.
Oh, you're going to pull a me.
Live.
Live.
Do it live.
Cue the Benny Hill theme music. Do 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 do. What?
Camera six, please.
I'm getting seasick. Captain Jack Sparrow getting seasick.
Man overboard. I see your special effects department is definitely.
I'm sailing away. Come sail away. Oh, come sail away.
And back to my corner. Back to my corner.
Get back in your corner.
Hi. Okay, sorry. Sorry, my OCD. It was like.
Well, my OCD had me originally changing that camera altogether because I'm like, I don't like the arm.
I know. Yeah. I know these arms. We have to, we have some upgrading to do, and we will. And we'll
eventually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to get gold plated arms.
Hey, I want mine first.
Yeah, right. All right, Jack. All right, Jack.
So you want one from the 30 songs that I wrote? I actually found one here that is the 30th one.
Oh, all right.
So I believe this is the last one that I had written in the series.
Oh. I got to ask, is it a mellow one or?
No, it's a harder one.
It's a harder one. Okay.
It's for your musical
stage. The camera's on me.
That's okay. He's prepping.
Okay.
It's okay. Just cut all of that out.
All right.
I'm
just going to angle myself a little bit here. Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, again? You're good. Right.
So this song is called Forgiven. I came up with it by putting my capo on everything except for the last two strings.
Aha.
For those of you who play guitar. Is it a nice little, that's what an E minor would sound like with that. Keep on the fourth. The song's called Forgiven.
Have you seen my spirit from my body? It was driven. It took to fly. Left out of sight till I could be forgiven. If there's a light that's shining towards the pain that I have given, my spirit cries for me to remember that I'm still living. Even though some days I wish that were not true, learn to keep my pain at because I love you. I do not wish to see the day that you learn to hurt the way I do.
Wow. That was awesome.
Thank you.
I was making sure, like, is it one of those musical pauses or is it?
And then he goes right down.
That was awesome, dude. Thank that was you, awesome.
Awesome. I love the sound of your guitar.
Oh my God. It sounds awesome.
Thank you. Appreciate that. It's an oldie guitar. This guitar is 14 years old.
That's beautiful. I love the pearl and.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can get a little close up on this thing because there's a lot of detail.
There is a lot of detail.
Let me see. Let me zoom in on. What are we calling her?
Deanna.
Yeah,
look at that pearl right there. That's gorgeous. This
is my baby.
It's the old moneymaker right there.
These all have these little things here, I believe, on their acoustic. They have this like interesting little design at the bottom.
Yeah.
It's like a Dean thing. And same thing with little wings up top.
So she can fly.
It's kind of nice. Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome.
So I've had this guitar 14 years. In 2010, my house burnt. Apartment caught fire.
Oh, no.
Where I live, and I lost everything. Everything I ever owned. So, like, man. It started in the walls of my room. It was an electrical fire.
Oh, wow.
So I lost everything. I lost a hard drive with 70 songs that I had put in there. Never uploaded them online and stuff. So it was, like, a lot of stuff that I lost. A lot of songs gone to the annals of time. But every once in a while, I'll remember, like, some riffs or some lyrics of them and stuff. Like I hear something similar, I'm like, oh wait, I remember that. So it was hard. But after that, how my house burnt down. My dad had a friend who was kind enough to sponsor me with two things to help me get back on my feet because I was going through college still. He bought me a laptop to help me get through school, and then he bought me this guitar. And this guitar was, you know, pretty penny. But it was pretty much like, here, have at it. Go in there, go into the guitar center, pick what you want. It was one of those magical moments, and it's just like, have at it. And I was like, all right. And this one called to me. This is the one that I was like, all right, this is going to be the one. I've thankfully taken good care of it, and it's been survived long enough for, you know, it's only minor warping and stuff like that. Luckily, it has a truss rod, so we can fix little things and stuff, but it definitely needs a tune-up. I've been curious about getting another one, but it's one of those things where you've had something so long, so attached to you.
The sentimental value of it.
Yeah, you just don't want to.
You've been a lot. You two have been through a lot together.
Exactly. No one never been as, this guitar never been as me, I should say. So, but of everyone else, this thing will never leave me.
That's your ride or die right there.
It is. It's my bottom bitch.
That's your old yeller.
Facts.
Old yeller.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's helping me. It's helped me through so much emotion and stuff like that throughout the years. It's definitely been like a therapy, and I feel like a lot of people go out there and use their performing for therapy and stuff like that.
Sure.
Right
I feel like we have that catharsis on stage and stuff when we are able to release certain things or certain emotions. I always talk to other songwriters about how cool it is, like, when you see someone go on stage and perform something for the first couple times, like the way that they sound and like the rawness of it, you know, they still, like, it's still fresh, like a wound is still fresh to them and stuff, mm-hmm. versus like when they perform it years later, you know,
and that emotion, like, isn't so
well. No, it's just evolved,
right?
You know, it's like,
right.
You've changed, you've taken things in a new light, you're grown, you know what I mean? Now it's a part of your past, it's not a part of your present,
right?
You're thinking more about how you want to perform the song as opposed to just getting it out there because it felt good, you know.
Sure.
You're looking, paying attention to the nuance and the details and the song and stuff like that, and how you want it to be interpreted and heard by other people. So you're getting that, like, two ways to enjoy a song from an artist, like from when it's fresh and also from when it's an older song as well. Yeah, and there's songs that, same for myself, where I've had to change the way that I perform certain songs and stuff because I've gotten older. My voice isn't the same it used to be when I was in my 20s. So it's definitely gotten to the point where I've had to move the capo around a couple different spots, you know what I mean, to figure out, like, oh, which key do I want to sing this in, you know, and just change things around, and I can be that dynamic, luckily. But it's one thing that I try to keep track of, because we're changing always, like, can do and stuff like that, and what we're capable of is changing and stuff. And maybe sometimes I might not be able to, like, scream as much, but I can do better falsettos and stuff like that, and vice versa. You know what I mean. So it's like,
that's an aspect of creating the music where you don't really take in consideration, either as a musician or as a fan of the music, that, you know, when you start off, you sound one way, but you do it long enough, you're going to sound a whole different other way.
Yeah. It's like Dave Matthews has been doing, he's one of my idols.
I love Dave Matthews.
Right? He's been doing this for so long that, like, you forget, like, when I listen to those songs, I forget that, like, he's performed some of those songs the first time, like, in 91.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean? Like, fucking, like, it's been so long that dude's been doing those songs for, like, 30 fucking years. And that's the type of, like, longevity that I see for myself.
You know what I love, though, about like Dave Matthews and seeing him live is, yeah, he's had these songs that he's been playing since the dawn of time and everything. And it's like, yeah, we know instantly what it is when it's on the radio. But when you see him live, that one song, that one, you know, 4 minute song now becomes 14 minutes because each musician has their own little solo. And the song, it's like a giant jam session for every song.
That's my goal.
Yeah.
It's literally my dream. It's That's my awesome. Goal is to have a band like that can just jam with it, that can pick up a song with me and be like, all right, you guys ready to just jam this next part for like 2 minutes?
That's all they do is have fun with it. They run with everything.
That's goals right there. I'm looking for a drummer, looking for a bassist, looking for a guitarist. And if I can get a good guitarist, you know what I mean, who can even pick up the songs on acoustic, then I can start to, or even on electric, you know what I mean, and stuff like that. We can get a lead guitarist on there and stuff.
Yeah,
I'd be willing to trade off. Yeah, I'd be willing to trade off, you know what I mean? Because it's like I know eventually my electric guitar is something that's going to have to be a part of the sound and stuff like that. I used to always record myself when I was younger, like using old school apps like Audacity and stuff like
that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, like the basics of basics, the recording myself in the living room. But I used to have backup harmonies, guitar solos, you know what I mean? Yeah, like all different types of things that I'm just like, this is impossible because I'm a solo artist. But now I can kind of see a potential of meeting other people who could actually fill those roles and get those dreams a little bit
more. Look at you evolving.
Yeah.
Well, we're just going to put that commercial out there right now. Hey, if you are looking for a band, if you are a drummer.
This is the open casting call right here.
Yes. Call out your boy.
Call out your boy, Jason's Jack. Oh, man. Yeah, we're going to manifest it for you, my friend.
Yes.
I hope
Listen, so. Listen, this show and what it's become for us so far and... What? We started doing the recording in February.
February, yeah.
We debuted it in May. It's now, you know, mid to end of August, and just it's all been based off of manifesting, you know, what's the next best thing that That's we, right. what's the next goal, what's that? So, yeah, I believe in the power of manifestation, and I'm putting that out there for man.
Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, and, you know, we're so lucky. Like, that music community is so tight-knit. Very supportive. We have a lot of people, a lot of musicians that have kind of climbed the ranks that still help out other musicians that are just starting out or, you know, just getting out there. So you never know, man. You might be looking at a band.
Let's see, man. Fingers crossed. Yeah. As I learned before, don't count the chickens before they hatch.
Yep. 100%.
We'll get there. And like I said, it happens naturally. Like it somebody's going to listen to your stuff, and it's kind of like falling in love. You know, they just like, oh, I need to be a part of this. You know what I mean? They want to be a part of it. So I'm patient. You know, this is just the second year. I have a 5-year plan.
Okay.
Nice.
So there's different steps. Like the making a band is in year 5. We're in the middle of year 2 or 3. We're starting into year 3 now, this whole thing. So I think if I stick to my plan, we're going to be good. You know, the way that I like to tell my friends is I like to grow like moss.
Yeah.
You know, out of the sunlight, but it's still consistent. You know what I mean? It's going to be there. You don't even know it's there, but it's growing.
Yeah. And I like that.
That's kind of how I've been growing. And I want people to, I don't necessarily want to plan like a big tour until people are asking for me. Like, you know, like I want to hit Connecticut when people are starting to be like, hey, you want to come play a show in Connecticut? Or, you know, like Rhode Island, like when Rhode Island places are starting to like, ask for me and stuff like that because it's becoming like that. Little by little, you start to reach your nets into places. Certain venues will hit you up. Hey, we'd like to have you back. Some places you have to knock a little bit more on those doors before you get in, but it's a matter of consistency and where you see you're valued and where you see your worth and stuff like that.
And I always say,
who sees that too?
Know your worth and then add some tax to that, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe even just a little bit of shipping and handling. Screw it.
And don't let other people change the way you see your worth because that happens very easily.
Yeah.
Very easily when somebody might invite people to the show and have nobody show up and now they feel worthless. You know what I mean? It's just like you can't internalize those things because people live lives. People have their own lives. Sure. People are all doing their own things and nothing is ever meant personally when people don't show up for your shows and stuff like that. It's part of the gamble.
And also, you know, in that respect too, it's like I don't believe in coincidences. Everything happens for a reason. I have what's to be will be tattooed across my back because I solely believe like nobody showed up that night. It was for a reason. Mm-hmm. Something better's coming your way. Something else is happening. You know what I mean? Yeah, you can't let that define you for sure.
Yeah. It gets very easy with like defeats, to get dissuaded from sticking with it or feeling like the community isn't, there for you sometimes. Like it's easy to become cynical is my point. And, I think that the fact that I have such good friends, it's easy for me to not be cynical and a little bit more optimistic about this, what's possible with the power of community and stuff like that.
Sure.
Because it is, at the end of the day, there is an aspect of performing where we do have to realize that certain people are doing this because it's their livelihood. Right? Mm-hmm. Certain people are doing this because it's a passion. You know, sure. It's an art to yeah. them. It's something that they really love to do. And there are going to be people who you're taking opportunity from in that moment when you book a show, but that doesn't mean you're taking an opportunity from them. It means you created an opportunity for yourself. And in that same sense, you have to respect, like the way that I was taught about like how much you should ask for yourself at a show, there is a minimum, you know what I mean? So that you don't water down the market and stuff like that, because we want to be able to make this a business where everybody can enjoy, everybody can perform different places. That said, there are certain venues that can afford you and certain venues that can't, you know what I mean? There are certain venues that can afford to pay you $150 for 3 hours and certain venues that cannot because they're struggling.
Right.
And I think as a musician, it's also important to know that and to be able to play at either one of them, to be able to give opportunities to venues that can't, that can maybe only pay you with beer or two, you know what I mean?
Right.
Versus venues that can actually draw people there for afford to pay you some money and stuff for your talents. And I think that as long as you're open to that and you're open to performing in any type of venue and stuff, you're going to be a lot more successful because you're building your sound, you're building a community, you're building a conversation with a stranger who's eventually going to follow you or possibly add you on YouTube or possibly listen to your stuff on Spotify if they care that much, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's like, if you don't create those opportunities, you know what I mean? So it's almost like an opportunity for success. Like how many opportunities for success did I create for myself today?
Well, that's why we're happy that you came on the show. Because we're a negative profit operation here.
It's called a passion project for a reason.
Yeah, so we paid Jack here with some drinks and snacks, lots of golden chocolates.
Some giggles.
Yeah, so we appreciate you.
I appreciate you guys. No, and that's what it's about. It's like, at the end of the day, money is only as useful as for what it gets you. You know what I mean?
And you can't take it with you and you're gone either.
Exactly. Yeah. And at the end of the day, like I could either get exposure by paying for it or get exposure by making a friend who's going to help me get exposure.
You know
what I mean? Like, well, how would I rather do it?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, friends are nice. And I think like we're all supporting each other in that sense. And that's important. You don't necessarily need to always buy a friend CD. You can just, you know, stream their thing a couple of times, you
or
know,
just
give them a couple
the
of likes on their Instagram.
Yeah,
give them a share.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, there's lots of ways to support each other now that don't involve money. And money is just like, I think, something easy to get fixated on and you can lose your creativity in that, or lose your drive, I should say, if you're focused on just the money aspect.
Oh, sure.
Right.
There's more than just materialistic, you know, aspects of that. Like like you said, like, just the power of word of mouth, or, hey, I heard this song and I really like it and I think it's something you'd like too. Here, let me share this to you in a text message. And the next thing you know, it spreads like wildfire. Right. Somebody else hears it and they're like, that was good. I know somebody that's going to like this. And the next thing you know, it's...
Yeah.
That's getting you out there, and that's going to be beneficial in the long run too.
Yeah. And I'm not like... I feel like ultimately I'm at a spot now where I'm comfortable enough to ask a place for a gig. A lot of people aren't. And a lot of musicians are really timid about that fact.
Sure.
So you do have to either choose to be a leader or not in these roles, to either take this, or do I want to start to open up opportunities for others? And whenever I book a place now, I'll try to get 3 dates, 2 solo dates and 1 trio date, so I can get 2 other people to jump on the bill with me.
Oh, that's cool.
Opportunities. And then if they like them, then they can book their own show there. You know what I mean?
Right.
Little things like that. I just had a trio gig a week or two back with Samantha Herman and Abby Lamar at Altruist Brewing.
Nice.
Yep. I've had another trio gig with Morgan Elise and Otto Scovea at Deep Roots Distillery.
Nice.
So I try to set up the trio shows. I'll be having another one coming up soon, I believe, at Otter River Pub.
Okay.
I still haven't booked the acts yet, but I'm going to be asking a couple of friends, and we'll see who we can get on there for us as
well. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yep. Well, let's give the crowd...
Give another song?
Another song, shall we?
Let's see what we got for you guys.
All right, what energy are we bringing this time?
How about I let you choose? What do you prefer?
Okay. Okay, I got this. The theme song to Reading Rainbow. No, I'm just kidding.
Butterfly in the sky.
Wait.
Take a look. It's in a book. Reading Rainbow.
All right, put it on some platinum album here. Your show, my friend. So you go ahead and. All right.
Yeah, you want to do something a little more low key, or what are you thinking?
Let's see here. I'm gonna go. That sound a little bit lower energy, I guess.
All right, let's do it.
Actually, no, I changed my mind.
Okay, let's not do it.
That was a fake out.
Psychy.
Let's go with.
I like how you still keep it old school with the book and not the iPad.
I'm not going to lie. This book right here, by the way, I recently made my little design on there.
Nice. Yeah,
set up my own little Tasteless Jack logo eventually.
Nice.
Hopefully we'll see.
I can make one of those Tasteless Jack logos for you.
Ooh.
On like a vinyl that you can slap on there.
Ooh, that'd be sweet.
Yeah. I got you. We'll talk after.
Let's see what I got next for you guys. This next song. All right. It's called Ethereal Rising. It's one of my newer ones.
All right.
Say, man, that guitar is it's meant to be, because it just marries up with your vocals so well.
Oh, that makes me so happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's my baby.
Oh, that's awesome.
Baby.
I love the sound of your guitar, and it almost kind of reminds me of like a 12 string, the way that you play it.
No, I have a 12 string at home.
Do you? Oh, I can only imagine. That must be incredible.
It is. I got it from an ex, though, so I don't play it often.
Bad juju.
Well, it tucked away.
When you first taught yourself how to play the guitar, did you start off with the 6 string?
Yes. Okay. So my first experience learning guitar, I'll actually show you what I played. I found an old dusty Fender acoustic in my dad's closet that he had kept He bought it in a flea market probably when I was 8 years old. And I was probably 15 years old when I first decided to like be ballsy enough to get in there and grab it. Take, you know, you don't touch your dad's shit. So I was like, fuck it, let's see what happens. What's the word? So
I get grounded. That's what's that worth it.
You know what I mean? I've been through worse. So ultimately, I took it out, and I believe I heard Metallica.
Okay.
And I was like, ooh, I know YouTube was around, so I decided to YouTube what I heard and try to figure that out on the guitar. So I figured out, I was like, all right, if you put your fingers down, it makes different noises. So I had to just find like where that first note that I heard was.
Yeah.
And then the next one that I heard. So
you learned all by ear.
Yes. And that's how I get my sound, really, is because I'm not musically trained. I'm not.
Do you know how to read music or anything?
Nope. None of that. No musical theory, none of that shit. I don't know any of that jazz. I very much in all my ear. The way I understand music is, I tell my friends, is a series of half steps and whole steps. And I just interpret which ones should be where. And which ones make sense where by ear. You know,
right.
It's not like I'm going to know, like, what when we're playing in the key of B minor, I don't know. I just know that,
it just sounds good.
Don't hit that because that doesn't go with that. You know what I mean? Doesn't sound right, so don't play that again. It's like, okay, cool. These are the ones. There's only 12 notes. There's about seven of them that you're figuring out for any scale. If you can figure out what seven to hit, which five not to, more likely, it's easier for me to figure out what five not to hit.
Right. Process of elimination.
Exactly. It's like, all right, just avoid those and we're good. So it's kind of the way I understand music. But yeah, the first thing I figured out was.
Oh yeah.
There you go.
Which I believe is one.
Well, that beats Smoke on the Water. Not that we're hating on Smoke on the Water, but I mean.
Still good. But yeah, then after like you evolve to the, once you can get through the, you know, the basics, then you're the. With my playing is that this is just getting technical for the people who like guitar stuff about how
I had to zoom in on Chris just now because the little glimmer in his eye.
Oh yeah,
he's just awestruck.
I was like, I love Metallica.
That's awesome. The thing is, like, once you learn your basic chords, right? Let's say a G. I use G a lot, right? At least the position of a G, right? Because I could play this anywhere with a capo once you put it on, but you're still holding the position of the G right here where it would be relative to a capo.
I love this. I'm getting a music lesson.
Quick little light. You guys said you want to learn. So.
Yeah.
So if I'm holding a G, what I try to do is I'll hold the bass of that note, which is up here, right? And then I can mess around with my fingers to figure out what sounds right. So like, ooh, that sounds like a nice combination, right? So now I know. That's one possible combination that I could just move up and down. I can make like so much songs from that. I just made that up right now.
Wow.
You know, just like all for me, it's about percussion and moving the fingers around. Just like all different positions, but you can come up with so many songs off of these little tiny things. And all I did was keep my middle finger there and mess around with the other fingers. But now I could also figure out another pattern, maybe not use the two and the fours that I was using here, but maybe two and three. So I could be. So there's lots of different things when you're messing with numbers and stuff like that. That's the way I understand music, right? I don't know what necessarily the notes that I'm hitting exactly are, but I know the positions that my fingers are in order to understand the noises they should make.
Oh, that's cool.
You work your way down through scales. And then the same thing could be applied to like a D. So like if I'm playing a D, that's the D note, the D string. I can again move that. Ah. it's once you find the scales and the notes and the things you should hit, like I just figured out what not to hit there, instantly changed it to what I should hit. So like that's kind of how you teach yourself these scales. Like, oh, I made a mistake. That didn't sound right. Let me fix that and not hit that one again.
That almost sounded like Stone Temple Pilots.
Yeah.
Bow, bow, down.
I can hear that. I can hear that. Now you have me by the flame. There it is.
There it is.
There it is. Yeah. You make it look so easy.
I know, right?
That's the beauty of learning by ear, though, is that you don't need to look up tabs for shit, because I've always taught myself by ear. You know,
right? Like, and you're like, I know how this is supposed to sound.
That sounds like, yeah. So that's another thing. Like, if you get requested at a bar or like at an open mic, or they're like, hey, can you play this? I'm like, if I can hear it in my head,
yeah,
possibly.
Like, right, because you know what to do to achieve that sound by now.
Yeah, for sure.
So
for shizzle.
Do you have cool. any advice that you would give, like, any aspiring musician just starting out?
Do a little bit every day. Don't do a lot. Don't overwhelm yourself. Yeah, I mean, when you're first starting off, you fall in love with it, and you want to do it every day, all day, and stuff like that. Or you don't, and you don't want to touch it, and you want to just leave it alone in a dusty corner. But if you at least get to leave it alone, dusty corner, fine, but pick it up 5, 10, 15 minutes, play a little bit, get a little bit of calluses on your fingers, it becomes a little bit more comfortable. Mm-hmm. Now maybe the next day you play another 10, 15 minutes, and it's not going to hurt as much. You know, it's going to be a little easier to hold the positions you did. And that's kind of the practice, is just do a little bit every day. If you're trying to perform, if you're trying to sing and play guitar, start practicing doing that early. Because what I learned was, when I learned to play guitar at 15, it took me like maybe a year or two to get good enough to like play through a song. Then I realized when I started to sing, that was going to take me a whole nother year to practice how to do that right. So I wasn't able to like properly sing.
Doing the multitask.
Guitar. Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really easy to be good at one or the other, but then putting them both at the same time, then it's like, oh, this is going to be a while.
Yeah.
So it's also a matter of pacing yourself and realizing that just because you got really good at guitar that first 2 years, doesn't mean, and you got really good at singing maybe even that next year, doesn't mean you're going to be doing them both at the same time expertly well at the first time. So it's a development cycle, development process. And then also, like I said, I've been doing open mics for over a decade. So, or it was a decade before my last one before I came back. So it's been, and then these last 2 years, it's been a development of my voice. You know, like the way that I sound now on this microphone is not the way I sounded when I started doing open mics 2 years ago. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's been crazy amount of development. And that's because of consistency. And that's because I decided to keep going. And that's the difference between now, these last 2 years, and 10 years before that, is that I decided not to, and I decided to, you know?
Yeah.
You just got to make the choice to keep doing it. And there are people that I saw doing it all those 10 years, like Molly Jane Gain, who like inspired me and stuff, like who never stopped hustling, and kept hungry at the whole music business, and is still performing out there and stuff. And I've shared bills with her now. So like there are people out there who I've seen nonstop hustling. And that's what also made me want to come back, was seeing that they were still at it. And it's like, wow, if they can do this after like 10 years, then why can't I do it a couple years after my break? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I could definitely, I don't think it's too late. So
speaking of which, your influences, I know you've mentioned Dave Matthews Band and a couple others, but who's your biggest musical influences in your?
I mean, Dave Matthews is a huge one because of the way the style of music, but I mean, I listen to a lot of metal.
Oh, nice.
So I'll listen to things from Mastodon to Every Time I Die to Gojira. And then I also listen to like certain acoustic artists, like Benelli Jamal, Iron and Wine, Piers Ficini, a couple like random people like Ewan Dobson, who was a big guitar guy growing up on YouTube, one of the first like big YouTube guitar guys and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What I listened to growing up was Tool,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of like the new metal stuff that you like, Nikki, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. Pretty much anything you would hear on WAAF growing up was that's the type of stuff that I cover. A lot of my covers are pretty much like 90s, 2000s metal and stuff like that. I grew up on the Linkin Park era. That was probably like the first band I saw in concert live.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think I saw Linkin Park at the Palladium. It was my first show. And I got to touch Chester Bennington after crowd surfing.
Can you, wait, I want to stop the story. I'm having a hard time processing Linkin Park at the Palladium.
Yeah. During Meteora. It was their second CD.
That was such a great album.
It was literally like they had just started to announce Meteora and stuff like that.
That was probably one of my favorite albums from them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was young. I was lucky enough that was one of my first shows and stuff. And getting to see that, I was a big metalhead growing up. I went to a lot of metal shows growing up.
That's cool.
And it's also like what gives me like the weird like chords, or sorry, the weird scales that I play and stuff like that, where I listen to a lot of different possibilities, I guess, in the music that I listen to, because I also listen to like EDM and hip hop.
I love EDM.
Yeah.
I geek out on EDM.
Like Zomboy, Skrillex.
Oh my God. Yes.
Glitch Mob.
I saw Glitch Mob live and they are absolutely incredible.
Yeah. They're fucking
incredible.
I'm insane. That's one of my favorites in terms of like electronic music as well. And then I also listen to stuff like hip hop, you know, J. Cole, Kendrick, Immortal Technique. I listen to a Spanish rapper called Residente. So I like to get my influences from various places, because I grew up in Queens, New York, is where I was born. I was raised there till I was 10, so I was raised kind of in the hood. My brother listened to hip-hop growing up, like Tupac, Biggie, Puff Daddy. Not so much Puff Daddy anymore.
Yeah.
I think we all stopped.
That show, Be Nameless.
His name shall not be named. That's right. Like Voldemort. So I grew up in that style. And then when I moved to Worcester, my uncles and stuff were listening to stuff like Ozzy Osbourne and Alice in Chains and Def Leppard and... Like all the classics. I went to Ozfest and young and stuff like that. You know, some of my first experiences with my uncle and stuff.
We probably ran into each other. Maybe not, but
cross paths or something.
Cross paths over at Ozfest. I went to two of them. They both had Korn in there. One was Disturbed. One was with Marilyn Manson.
Who sings the song Holy Diver?
Killswitch Engage.
No, not the original.
Molly something?
No.
Molly Hatchet? No.
I got a Google machine. Carry on. I'll find
it. Oh, there you go.
Who sings? I'm trying to remember who is. The name of this band is a classic band that I'm trying to remember their name of.
See if I can
they have the mascot named Eddie. What is their name? Oh, man, I'm giving you guys trivia questions now.
I know. This is
Eddie. I got it. I'm looking it up.
I'm still looking at.
They got banned from performing at Ozfest after a certain.
Dio?
No.
No.
Holy Diver.
God damn it.
Killswitch just instantly came to mind.
No. And you're right, actually. Now I'm thinking of the wrong song.
Okay.
So is it that not the song then?
No, I was right.
I'm
not, you are totally right. I'm not going to lie. For the record, you were totally right.
So I have coworkers that call me Shazam at work, because I'm like a human Shazam.
No shit.
Yeah, I can hear a couple of notes from a song, or somebody can be like, who sings this, or what's the name of that, and like chances are I could tell you who sings it or the name of the song, or you know, it'll just start randomly playing and I'll be like, oh, that's so and so.
Now I'm gonna be stumped. It's gonna come to me eventually.
There's a, you know, circling back to the EDM music scene, I got introduced to that music genre with Dance of the Dead, or Dance with the Dead. I don't know.
With the Dead?
Yeah, I'm going to throw that out to you.
I've never heard of that.
I know. It will blow your mind.
Well, now you got me really
curious. Yeah. It's going to...
And the band I was thinking of, by the way, was Iron Maiden.
Oh, Iron Maiden, of course.
But that's still not Holy Diver.
That's definitely not. I totally was wrong about that.
Iron Maiden should cover that.
Right? But now it's coming up.
Yeah. Now right. All I can think of is dun da da dun da da dun dun. Great. Now I have to listen to that afterwards. Yeah, thanks for planting that earworm.
I have Holy Diver in my head. So, you know, I've noticed too with your color scheme. Of your marketing campaign there is a lot of black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any story behind that? Any meaning behind it at all?
The black and white is very basically from Tasteless Jack. It's an aesthetic that I enjoy because it gives things a little bit more attention to detail. I notice things like the veins in my hands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Things like that I kind of enjoy that run almost like electricity. You know, it looks almost like it's electricity that running into the guitar. So, I enjoy black and white. It lets you take a little bit more attention to the darks and the whites. And yeah.
Okay. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to do a first.
Oh.
A first for this show.
Turn black and white.
Should I turn us all black and white?
No, I'll take care of that.
Okay.
Ooh. Yeah. But go ahead. Find your blackest, whitest song.
What?
Well, I did it.
I already
performed
anymore.
The Black Eyes earlier. I was like, that would have been the one.
Oh, yeah.
I'll play a sad song. How about that? I'll play one of my quieter ones, Alone Again.
Okay.
And this song is going to be on my upcoming EP, hopefully released sooner rather than later. It's got violins on it from Skip Von Kusky. Very excited to get it released.
Get ready, guys, because in 3, 2, 1, it's black and white.
Ooh, are we officially in black and white now?
We're now in black and white mode.
Wait, where did my color go?
I feel like I'm a sad girl era right now.
It's like that movie where they get sucked into the black and white world.
Oh, yeah.
Plainville.
Yeah.
All right. The song is called Alone Again, and I wrote it about dealing with solitude in a positive way, because a lot of us become self-destructive when we're alone.
Yeah.
So it's about learning how to deal with being alone in a more positive way and not losing ourselves to vices in those moments. So, yeah.
spent. I knew your love for me was real then. Yes, I know I need a friend. I'm learning how to be alone again. Again.
Wow.
Wow.
Yes.
I can't wait to hear that with the violins. That's going to be
yeah.
amazing.
I'll send you a link. It's on YouTube.
Oh, yes. Oh my God. That was incredible.
Yeah.
I actually... not only feel sadder
sorry
after hearing it but because of all this black and white, let's bring it back, guys. Color, there we go. Okay,
color.
No, that was beautiful. Seriously, that was thank you, man. Gorgeous song,
appreciate it.
Yeah well, we are nearing the end, but we'll do a few more questions and then let you finish off with one more song.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Nikki, you want to go ahead and take this next one?
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, I know you've been playing music for a while now. What's one of the craziest things that you've ever encountered at, like, a gig?
Oh, boy.
This is my favorite question.
Don't hold back.
I'm just going to say that I one time performed at a place that gave me the vibes of a swingers club.
Yeah.
The reason I say that is because there was definitely a lot of couples talking to each other and women feeling each other's breasts.
Maybe they were doing mammograms.
You never know, checking each other for cancer. It's important to check. Cancer Awareness Month is coming up. And also one of the ladies after one of my songs just screamed out at me, "You sound sexy." And I was just like, I don't know how to interpret that. I don't know what sexy sounds like, but all right.
That's awesome.
Keep performing my set. Keep it moving.
Were there upside down pineapples anyway?
I don't know. I have a question. Now I mentioned that.
Now you're like, let me think back on that. Do I remember any of those now? No, it all makes sense.
Was there fruit? Was there salad? I don't know. Someone was getting sun tossed anyway.
Things are starting to all line up now, right?
Yeah,
is this the upside down of Bikini Bottom?
Right. Stranger Things meets SpongeBob.
Right.
And then you could also just have things go wrong during your performance, like having a gust of wind blow your lyrics into the bushes far behind you.
We're improvising now.
It's like, all right, I'm going to mumble the end of that one. Let's get through this one real quick.
Oh, no.
But also beautiful things, you know, like when you have kids dancing to your stuff.
You
know what I mean? You give a kid a sticker and they're too young to even know what to do with it, so they stick it in their mouths and chew on it. They're like, all right, that's not what that was for, but the cool.
Bobby, this tastes weird.
You know, we're not liable for any sticker accidents, disclaimer.
It sticks to the roof of my mouth.
Right, it just gives itself instructions. So, that's some of the stuff, I guess, that's happened at some of the venues that I played at.
It's so much fun. Like, you know, what music inspires in both directions. everything from really beautiful moments to like, did that just happen?
Right.
You know, did I just see Teletubbies walk through here?
I've seen during other friends' gigs, like old couples getting a little bit too intimate than they should in the middle of the dance floor. Yeah. It's definitely, if people would like to groove and get...
People feel that, you know?
They get a little...
Get into the music and feel that.
Who knows, you know what I mean? You got to let the music take hold sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Hell yeah.
So I'm going to ask this one.
What's up?
It seems like you've played at quite a few different places.
Mm-hmm.
But do you happen to have a dream venue that you would love to perform at?
Dream venue I would like to perform at. I mean, it's kind of tough because I feel like a lot of the venues that I have performed at have already been the dream venues that I was, like, last night. The Electric Haze, for example, was pretty much that was a dream venue. I'm not going to lie. Last night at the Electric Haze with Mosby and Gumby's girlfriend and AP, that was a dream venue for me because it's a place that I go every Wednesday that I also have been around since Electric Haze was around before that with the Spiritual Haze when they used to have a tiny little place that was a hookah bar inside of, like, an apartment. So I've been a fan of Electric Haze for a long time and the whole community there. So that's that was honestly like a dream for me, you know. If I were to perform at the Palladium one day, that'd be cool. If I were to gather a following, that would
keep it local.
Enough. Oh yeah,
go back to the roots.
You know what I mean? I'm a very much a local guy. Like when I graduated high school, I had choices in college to like go to Vermont, go to UMass, you know, Amherst and stuff. But I chose Worcester State because I wanted to stay local, wanted to stay close to family, still with some friends. So I'm a big fan of Worcester. You know what I mean? I love the city. It's where I grow my roots, you know.
And Palladium is such a terrific venue. I just recently watched Young Other out there perform on the upper floor. But both the upper floor and especially the first floor, what great spaces.
Jared Moore was a bassist, I believe.
Yeah. That day. Yeah.
I saw my boy poster. I love Jared.
He's Jared's awesome.
He's a homie. He's a great
He's also mic, just amazing for the music community. Yeah. Just super, super supportive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. He's played a couple of games with me and gives me great advice as well, vice versa, exchange a lot of advice because we're both going through a lot of the same stuff, and that's a good thing to do with a lot of other musicians too, is to be support for each other in those moments, because it gets overwhelming, you know what I mean? We're all doing the same thing, you know.
Yeah, so
it gets overwhelming.
And it was cool too because we got to hang out after the show, and Jared and I just chit chatted, but I got to meet a couple other musicians too, and it's just cool. Like Jared's an awesome guy, and that Young Other is this awesome band, and with the Palladium, man, it's like it fosters that music scene well.
And I've been there since I was in seventh grade. Like, again, Linkin Park, I've seen so many bands there, you know what I mean? From Mastodon to every time, like all the bands that you can think of, like from the early era of AAF, I feel like have gone through there at some point.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I've even seen Korn, some EDM. Let me tell you, not the venue for EDM.
Yeah.
That sound system.
It's intense. It's intense. Yeah, it gets very...
Yeah, they overwhelm the shit out of that sound system.
No, EDM is always nicer outside. You want to be outside. You want the sunlight on you, I feel like, or the moonlight on you.
You got to be a little free spirit.
Yeah, you want to be out there and stuff. That's one. I miss working my music festivals. I used to work security, so that was like 12-hour shifts, rain or shine. Sometimes. Oh, yeah.
And the people watching must have been fantastic.
Dealing with drunk festival goers is not always the easiest. And not to mention a lot of people out there on acid and stuff. I've had some horror stories from some of those shows.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
They used to put acid in water bottles and spray bottles. And they would just spray people with the acid. Yeah, and you'd just start tripping balls.
You get sprayed because you absorb that through your skin.
Yeah, and we had workers who would just have to get pulled off their shift.
Oh, my God.
And they just start tripping. They've never done acid before.
Oh, no. And here they are getting accidentally dosed. Yeah, oh, my goodness.
Rough. Yeah. Some of the music festivals back in the day.
Oh, tots and pears. Oh, my God.
That's not a fun experience.
You're going to have to wear scuba gear if you're around here.
Seriously.
I learned that music. Electronic music festivals are a little different beasts.
Yeah, they're a different animal.
Very different than like your nice acoustic music festivals, which is not more peaceful, a lot more friendly, a lot less acid.
You know, at Metallica, the second day, it was pouring, raining, lightning, and they had to clear the whole
They had a delay.
Ground level. Yeah. So, but what was crazy funny was that they had everybody go up the balcony, up the stands,
concourse,
and underneath the concourse. And then somebody kept giving them false signal. It's okay to go back to the field. So you watch them run back to the field. And they're like running full sprint to get to that stage. And then the security comes back. I was like, no, go back.
Go back.
So they're like doing suicide laps. Yeah.
This happened more than once.
Oh, no.
This happened like three times.
How many false flags were there before somebody was like, all right, fuck this, I'm going home. Like,
and when they
get off the pot, like.
Oh, yeah. And when they came back for the third time, I was like,
Simon didn't say.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was just ridiculous.
Red light.
Games all of a sudden now.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy what you see out there.
That's facts.
You know. But that's part of the fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
100%.
Yeah.
And who knows, like maybe one day I'll get on stage like off the rails and stuff like that. That'd be kind of sweet too. I've had played open mics there
a couple times. Oh yeah, that's too. A cool venue. I like it there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very sweet spot. So there's less places to play.
Worcester has so many great places, and that city has just come such a long way too.
Mm-hmm.
It's cleaned up quite a bit, and there's so many great bars and venues. I mean, I remember back in like my early 20s, there were some questionable places, you know, and but it's cleaned up a lot. It's developed a lot.
It's definitely more. I remember in high school, it told us that it was the third largest city in New England, and now it's like you see why.
It's pretty damn big. Like a bustling metropolis.
It really is.
And also, I noticed too that there's a lot of transplants, like more people living in Worcester commuting to work in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed that a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's become easier, I think, for some of them to find jobs out there.
Yeah.
I think Boston.
The cost of living.
Congested. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've had friends from Boston look at places in Worcester as well, too. Becoming a lot more prevalent.
And it's really easy to be able to tell who's a plant of Worcester, who's been in Worcester for a long time versus the newbies, because they go and try to pronounce it.
Worcester.
Worcester.
Worcester. Worcester.
Wash your sister.
What is this?
You must be new here.
Facts. It's always a struggle.
Yeah, right.
When they're first coming. I remember when I first moved here, it was a struggle. But yeah, I moved here to Worcester because of family. Lots of family and stuff, which is also important to have. Roots with family around and stuff.
Absolutely.
100%.
And now my musician friends are my family now. So.
Aww.
Including you guys.
You guys too.
It's like Olive Garden here.
Well,
when you're here, you're family.
We love you, Jack.
Can I be your cousin?
You can be good.
I'm cousin Chris.
Yeah, cue the banjos.
Oh, yeah.
Is that King of the Hill?
Oh, it is King of the Hill.
Yes!
I'll tell you what, Mayor Bobby.
Tell you what. That's some mighty fine propane over there.
I love jamming that at the Dirty Gerund open mic is where I play in the house band. They do poetry open mics.
Yeah. Oh,
poetry.
Yeah.
We'll read poetry, and I get in the house band, and that will close up the night by playing that.
I love that. I remember when I was in college, you know, we'd have like these big bonfires, and somebody would always bring a guitar out. And I just remember sitting there one day and I don't know. Everyone was just having their own conversations, and it was just chatter everywhere. And then all of a sudden, you hear us, dun 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 dun, and we all just stop, and we're like, "That's fucking King of the Hill."
It's certain sounds, you know.
I love that.
Well, again, Jack, let me tell you, I appreciate you coming down here in the studio and performing for us. This has been an awesome fun time.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh my God. This has been awesome fun.
Yeah.
I hope to do it again in the future. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Season 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You're always welcome back.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're shooting for 50 seasons.
And a movie.
You got to get the movie.
Yeah.
But I want the movie to be totally out of order, like Pulp Fiction style.
Oh, I love it.
Ooh, where it's like a murder mystery. You got to like piece together the clues.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
One of those mind fuck movies, you know?
Yeah.
The best guy.
Well, again, thank you so much. Before we let you go, though, you have one more song for us?
I do. I'm going to play you Weather.
Okay.
It's one of my more recent songs, I should say. Right now, being mixed, it got recorded by my friend Brandon, aka Sunshine at Night, being mixed right now by my friend Mosby. And it has. In the recording, cellos by Skip Von Kusky.
Ooh.
So does that make you the weatherman? There's a chance.
Oh, yeah, weatherman.
There's 100% chance of weather.
I like that. Excellent.
Tasteless weather.
So, and weather is a song that's really close to home. I wrote it on my birthday last year, 3 days after my mom sadly passed away from cancer.
Cancer.
Yeah, yes. Fuck cancer. Facts.
Definitely.
So it carries a lot of emotion. I try to get through it a lot without crying, but it's definitely one that I wear.
My shoulder's proudly. Here for you, bud.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate you. I'm hoping that like it's a song that will help other people because it's about learning how to adapt to changes and drastic changes and sometimes slow changes as well. The song is called Weather. I'm gonna take a sip of water before I start. I learned from a friend a long time ago, wise words, hydrate to dominate.
Ooh, I like that.
Now there's 100% of precipitation.
All right, let's do this.
That was powerful. Yeah. Wow.
Appreciate you.
Yeah. No, we appreciate you, my brother. Wow. That was
cool. That's a hell of a way to end.
Yeah.
If you think that one's going to win the contest, let me know.
Right? Oh, man. No, that invokes emotion. I loved it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So thank you. Thank you for coming on
the
show.
Thank you for having me, guys. This has been amazing and awesome. And hopefully we'll do it again.
So much fun.
Yeah. And so before we officially let you go, where can people find you? Where's your music?
My music is going to be on tastelessjack.com. You can also find me on the socials, facebook.com/tastelessjack, youtube.com/@tastelessjack, instagram.com/tastelessjack. Add me as a friend. I like to make new friends. I'm one of those people who doesn't, you can see I follow a lot more than I have followers. So nice. I'm not afraid to add people.
You're a man of the people.
Yeah, I really am. I try to be. Let's be friends.
That's awesome. Yeah, we'll make sure that we include some linkage. Awesome.
Yes.
But again, thank you so much, Jack. I just really adore what you're doing, and I'm a fan.
Vice versa, man.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Big fan of this whole thing. You guys, I'm excited to come back next time and see that poll all filled with names.
Oh, yes. Right.
So I know. We're just going to have to take the whole building. The whole building's coming down with us if we ever move. Because I'm pretty sure that's a load-bearing pole right here.
You know, if I replace it, though, with a 2x4, I'm sure it'd be fine.
Yeah.
It'd be
fine. I was going to say, yeah.
we'll do the quick switcheroo, the 1, 2, 3. You pull this pole away, and I'll shove the board up there.
Yeah,
teamwork.
Teamwork. Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yes.
No, but thank you so much, Jack. We really appreciate you. We'll definitely have to get you back on.
When you're banned... Because your band is going to form.
Yes.
I love that.
Put yes, Tasteless Jack and the Pirates. Let's go.
Right. That's right.
Oh, my God. Let's not count those chickens before the hats.
Oh, no.
I'm just throwing out that name.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Tasteless Jack and the Scallywags.
The Shiver Me Timbers.
Yeah.
Shiver Me Timbers. No, thank you so much. And, thank you, Nikki, for doing what you do.
Amazing sound.
Thank you.
I know Nikki rocked it with the sound today. For
thank
sure.
you.
So good.
I'm excited to hear what this sounds like.
Yeah, me too. And then, guys, if you are already following us, if this is your first time listening to us, please hit that like to subscribe. We have a link tree. We have Instagram. We have YouTube and Facebook. You can find us mostly on our social handle at Musical Chairs Mass. Instagram wouldn't let me take that, so it's the Musical Chairs Mass. But guys, make sure you follow us, because by following us, you're supporting our musicians, and they really appreciate it. So again, thank you so much. Thank you, Jack.
And you know what? Totally. I'm gonna take one out of Jack's book here. Be my friend. Be Chris's friend. We're friendly people. Why not?
That's right.
Right?
Feel free to send us a friend request, too. Why not?
Yeah, I love all people.
Yeah, to the point where he's like, you have a guitar in your photo? I want to be your friend.
It's a sound strategy.
It's working out so far.
If there's an instrument in your profile picture, friend request.
Boom.
Yeah. Boom. Yeah, that's how we do it.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, again, thank you so much. This has been another episode of the Musical Chairs of Massachusetts. And this is your pal, Chris. This is your pal, Nikki. And this is your pal,
Tasteless Jack.
Signing off. You guys ready?
We out.
We out.
Yeah, we out.
Bye.
Woo. Woo. Good shit.